Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. On this show, we've talked a lot about Sean Puffy Combs. We've talked about the rise of Bad Boy Records. We've talked about Revolt. We've talked about Ciroc and building billion-dollar brands. We've had several of the executives from the companies in the Combs global umbrella on this show at several points. And if we're going to do that, we also have to keep it real when things are not going well and shit's hitting the fan. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to have a conversation about Diddy, where we're going to talk a little bit about our initial reactions from some of the allegations that have came out. But we're going to spend a bulk of the show talking about the business portfolio and where it stands with some of the most valuable companies in that portfolio. For today's conversation, I'm joined by Zach O'Malley Greenberg. He's a friend of the pod. He's done profiles on Diddy as a feature for Forbes. Diddy was one of the main focuses of his book, Three Kings. And Zach and I have had several conversations on this podcast about the businesses that Diddy has built. So here's our conversation. Hope you enjoy. All right. Today, we're here to have a conversation about Diddy and the state and future of the business empire that he's built over the past few decades. And I'm here with someone who wrote a book about Diddy, Zach O'Malley Greenberg. Welcome back to the pod.
Oh, thanks, Dan. As always, happy to be here.
Let's kick things off with the elephant in the room. Were you surprised by any of this with Diddy, especially as more news and more allegations and things have happened over the past few months?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to be surprised really by anything that comes out of the Diddyverse over the years. Right? I mean, he's said it all. Shootouts, coastal beefs, Diddy did it, but my lawyer is so good that Diddy got acquitted. It is hard to be surprised by anything that comes out of the Diddyverse, but to see things like sex trafficking, that sort of wasn't on my Diddy bingo card. His career has been defined by being Teflon. This seemed beyond the capacity of Teflon to deflect.
This was something that did feel like a surprise because, I'll be honest, had heard rumors over the years about different things that either have happened or how wild parties can get. And were there certain things that I could have assumed could have happened? Wild sex, drugs, yes, of course. No surprises there. But the stuff that came out from Cassie and those allegations, that's where it made me take a step back to be like, whoa, there are so many different sides to a person, and especially someone like this. You have the mogul entrepreneur that's always doing big things. You have the pro-black person that's lifting people up. You have the wild party person that's doing all of the things that you've heard about at the various parties. And then you have this level of violent crimes, sex allegations, rape. It definitely is disappointing to see, just because I know for me, being a fan of hip hop my entire life, this was someone that stood out early on as someone that was doing it big, someone that was doing it big on the business side and on the music side. And here we are where it becomes a much more complicated and unfortunate conversation. And first and foremost, you feel bad for any of the victims and any of the people that were hurt along the way by this behavior, actions, and decades of misconduct.
It makes you realize that no matter how much you study a person and, you know, write about them and so forth, I mean, there's just a whole other side that it is hard to know unless you're kind of there. Yeah. Diddy has had sort of like every other kind of scandal, you know, kind of surrounding him over the years, but not this kind.
And I think with this conversation, of course, we could continue and we think we're going to learn more when more information comes out about the various allegations. But so much of our discussions on the past episodes of this podcast have been focused around the businesses and talking a lot about highlighting the success or the impact of each of them. But we're going to take a different light where I wanted to run through a lot of those businesses with you and talk about the current state of those businesses, because there have been a lot of ties and a lot of moves and shaking that has happened, but also what the future looks like, especially for so many of these businesses that are tied to his name himself. So we should start with the biggest one that's there, and that is his partnership with Diageo. That includes the vodka brand Ciroc and includes the tequila brand De Leon. One, there was the lawsuit that happened last summer where Diddy had claimed that he didn't feel that Diageo was putting the full support behind the brand compared to some of the support that Diageo had given to Casamigos, which was the brand that was launched by George Clooney, and some of the big support and the success that that brand has had. Diageo came back and said that there had been frustrations on their end about some of the marketing spend that had specifically happened with the budget that Diageo had given Diddy to promote Ciroc, and how that was used for parties that a lot of these misconduct and sexual assault allegations have stemmed from. And then that just continues to snowball. And then as each of these additional allegations continued, Diddy eventually dropped the lawsuit. And it's interesting because one of the key things that you and I have talked about over the years is how this deal was structured, specifically on the Ciroc side, because at its peak, this was a brand that was selling well over 2 million cases a year. And some of the reports from Bloomberg and others have said that Diddy himself has pocketed over nearly $1 billion from the initial start of the partnership. But the key thing was who owns the brand of Ciroc. It was always that Diageo owned it. But if there was ever a sale, there was kind of this handshake 50-50 thing that they would have. But it seems like all that is out the window.
It's important to think about the history of this brand. It did not start out as Diddy's brand. It started out about, I think, almost 20 years ago as sort of like an experimental, different kind of spirit. Then along comes Diddy, and they strike this like pretty insane deal with him, enabled him to profit as though he were a co-owner in the event of a sale. Once expenses and so forth were deducted, Diddy really truly made this like the main part of his brand for, you know, really the past, I'd say, 15 years. So it was central to everything he did. What I really want to know, and I don't know, and I don't know if I'll ever know, is what did that ending of the partnership look like?
So you couple that with the fact that this brand peaked in sales almost a decade ago at this point, but how much did Diageo know about some of these impending allegations and some of this news coming out? And was that leverage in order to push on this? Because I'm with you. I think that there likely was some type of buyout. And I think that that buyout was for a much smaller amount of money than this 50-50 type of pseudo exit style relationship probably ever would have entailed if it had exited under more normal circumstances where it wasn't under duress or anything like that. But it's also important, I think, for us to just highlight how big of a focus this was for Diddy's business. This was central. Ciroc, the revenue that came specifically from Ciroc, not even talking about Darium, the revenue that came specifically Ciroc subsidized the other aspects of the Combs global enterprise. It helped fuel all of the wide range of expenses that Diddy had himself, whether it was private jets, boats, multiple houses, child support, support for other people, all of these things that fed into the lavish and extravagant lifestyle. Yes, there's a portfolio of businesses, but there was one business there that pushed everything forward, and it was this partnership with Diageo to sell vodka.
Yeah, and going back to my days at Forbes, you know, I was running the numbers, and you know, it was solely responsible for him making it onto our lists. I mean, he was making 50, 60, 70, 80 million dollars a year from this one thing. One other thing I would point out, though, don't forget, part of this whole dispute with Diageo is DeLeon Tequila. And DeLeon was a brand that he actually officially owned 50-50 with Diageo. But, you know, there was Casamigos, and George Clooney and his partners got, I think it was $700 million for it. But, you know, that was a different time. That was a different point in the market. I wonder if Diddy had promoted it more, if it would have done better.
We should move on to the next one, though, and that's Revolt. In November of last year, it was announced that Diddy would be stepping down as chairman of Revolt. And then in March, there was a anonymous buyer that was announced that had bought the ownership shares of Revolt from Diddy. So as what's been reported now, Diddy's no longer A, has an official role at the company, or B, has any ownership stake. The owner of the company, or the person that some people believe that has bought Diddy's shares, is Richelieu Dennis. Richelieu Dennis owns Essence Magazine. He also was a co-founder of Shea Moisture, which he sold to Unilever. Sundial, he works with Group Black. So this is definitely a mogul that has worked in both consumer product goods and in media as well. But Revolt's also been an interesting spot because you and I have talked about this in past episodes. Starting a cable network in 2013 is just a very difficult time to be starting a cable network. That's one thing. But then additionally, they have been able to expand and have a bit more on the digital side of things. And there was a recent article put out by the Hollywood Reporter that had interviewed the Tavio Samuels, CEO of Revolt, who had said that Revolt had its best quarter ever in Q4 and has not lost any advertisers since. So it was interesting to see some of those things there. But again, I'm interested to see what the future of this brand looks like, because even though it looks like there's commercial success, this is still something that a lot of people are going to look at and associate with Diddy.
They were trying to pivot from day one from being a cable channel to being multimedia, multi-platform, you know, something or other. But it wasn't really a good time to be doing that either.
Right. It's tough to launch a cable company in 2013. It's tough to also launch a digital media culture company brand in 2013 if the best case comp you had at that particular time was looking at Complex and the success that it had in the 2010s. But as we've seen, you're looping in Complex with many of the other brands that were able to raise a lot of outside funding, because when people thought that these digital media companies that were leaning heavily on Facebook were going to be billion-dollar entities in itself, and we've now seen what happens to BuzzFeed, Vice, Huffington Post, Complex, and all of that group of companies. And I mean, Complex recently was just, you know, divested and sold again for a fraction of what it had sold for a couple of years before. So if that's the best case scenario, it's tough. And it's a shame because, A, I think that they have had some great content over the years and some great shows. But I do wonder if a rebrand is in the future. Of course, you know, DeTavio did say that they had the best quarter they've ever had that they've had. And that's been great. And he's been a guest on this podcast before, and he's talked about some of their broadening the scope to not just try to be the Complex, but also talking about Black empowerment and just leaning heavily into social justice and things like that. And I think it'll be interesting too, if someone like a Richelieu Dennis is the person who is now the owner, how does that tie in with something like the Essence Fest? Because now you have these two tentpole events where I do think the events do make money for them. You have Essence Fest, which does really well for Essence in New Orleans. And then you have Revolt World in Atlanta, and you have two of these things. And assuming that you have enough content to push through, and if the content becomes a loss leader for these massive events, then it's like, okay, I can see the business working from a revenue perspective, but still may not quite have hit the initial vision that they thought that it was going to, but there's still some type of path, at least for continuation. But I'm still intrigued to see if a rebrand does happen.
Yeah.
Let's take a break for this week's chart metric stat of the week, and let's take a brief break from the Diddy conversation and talk about one of the most revered artists from the Bad Boy Entertainment era, and that's the Notorious B.I.G. His brand is as New York as it gets, but the number one city for his estimated audience size is actually Los Angeles. An estimated 5.48% of his overall audience, that's based on Spotify, YouTube, and Instagram followers, are based in Los Angeles, and that's compared to the 5.29% in New York City. Listen, big is as Brooklyn as it gets, but it was pretty cool to see this, especially considering the history of the East Coast, West Coast beef. It's all love, and it's great to see someone like Biggie get love on both coasts. Let's get back to our episode. Next, let's dive into Sean John.
Yeah.
This one will probably be a little bit quicker, but from a high level, this was the brand that he started in the late 90s. In 2016, he was able to make the sale for it. I think he pocketed $70 million from that sale that they had done to Global Brands Group in 2016. But then Global Brands Group doesn't do anything with the company. It just continues to decline and decline. He buys the brand back in 2021 for $7.5 million. But nothing happened after Diddy brought the brand back in 2021 either. You're now at this point where not only was there no movement, but even Macy's, one of the big retailers that was pushing it, had solely just started to decrease its inventory to the point where there really isn't anything that Macy's is offering under the Sean John brand. And last I checked, there's only two places that you could currently buy Sean John online. One of them is Amazon, and the other one is Walmart. And the Walmart one was interesting because I read about it on a website for, I think it was in a Fox Business Report, they recently did something on this. And I said, okay, I have to look this up myself. Look it up myself. Look to see what Sean John products are currently on sale at Walmart. They have blazers from Sean John that they have on discount for like $32.
What?
When was Sean John a brand that was selling $32 blazers? I'm not saying that they were like Brooks Brothers out here, but $32 for a blazer?
Yeah.
I'm just not quite sure what happened there to the point where it now is discount brand, even beyond something you would get at Target at those kind of prices. In some ways, it makes me think, okay, was buying back the brand more so a symbolism thing? Maybe there were bigger visions for it. Who knows? But it is a brand that, of course, sits under the house of Diddy, but A, literally has his name on it. So if they're ever going to do anything with it, you can't continue with that name. And it just seems like this is something that is kind of having a slow trickle.
Diddy, you know, Diddy initially waited too long to sell. If he had sold when Jay sold Rockaware and got, you know, 200 plus, he could have easily gotten hundreds of millions of dollars for it. But I think he waited too long. But it's hard when it's, you know, it's literally got your name on it. I wonder if that's kind of why he bought it back. It's almost like you're buying the domain name of, you know, of your government name, like just so people don't squat on it or something. Wouldn't it be annoying for him if somebody had gone out and paid $7 million for it and, you know, tried to use his image or trade off his image and do something else? So I wonder if it was almost more of it like a defensive maneuver, or maybe he just had filed it away in case he wanted to get back in and just like never got around to it. But that era of fashion, you know, the like the baggy suits and sort of like the, you know, the like mass market streetwear, like meets the, you know, the like upwardly mobile urban professional kind of, that ship has sailed. Jay-Z and Diddy and, you know, these guys who had these brands have now gotten so wealthy. It's just like not believable that they would wear their own brands anymore. And that kind of takes the fun out of it. Pharrell is going to wear Louis Vuitton and director of menswear there. So that makes sense. You'd believe that.
I think the domain squatter analogy is smart, because yeah, if someone else bought that, it would have been like, wow, you let ABG buy the company for $7.5 billion. People would have ripped them apart.
That's exactly it, right? I mean, that's exactly it. That's exactly who would have bought it too, right? I
mean, exactly. Yeah. Let's move on to Bad Boy Entertainment. You and I predicted that, okay, this is definitely something that could at least go for several hundreds of millions of dollars. But the thought was at the time, and this is from what I've heard, Diddy's going to buy it. Maybe we're kind of seeing a pattern here. Diddy's going to buy it, hold it himself, and then see if he can leverage down the road and, you know, leveraging his name and his IP to do different things. But a few months later, in 2023, he's putting out his Love album. There's more and more chatter from Mace and all the others. There's more buzz about these allegations potentially coming out. By that point, we'd already heard the Cassie thing come through. And then you hear that he reverts the publishing rights back to the original Bad Boy artist, whether it's Mace, Faith Evans, Total, the Biggie Estate, etc. Any of the artists that came through there, he reverts it back. So he no longer has those assets. He could still have at least some portion of the master side, depending on what that looks like in any of the brand related things there. But so he no longer owns those things, but it also is interesting because I'm sure he still owns a portion of that, but what is the current value of that? Because on one hand, I checked the Chartmetric data and some of the other stuff. People are still streaming the music. But on the other hand, if you were in the business of trying to buy and sell catalog, and not only are you looking at the current revenue, you're thinking about potential sync opportunities, ways to maximize this media, you went from being able to think, okay, you could turn this into a biopic someday and talk about everything that this person did, similar to how you had the Straight Outta Compton biopic. And now you're talking about any type of multimedia is probably going to be some tear down documentary. Like, that feels kind of like where we are now with the multimedia side of things.
Yeah. Although even before, if you were to imagine a Diddy biopic, it would have been so expensive to clear all the samples. There was that, the film, the Biggie biopic that he was involved in, and they did get a lot of Biggie's music in there. I would say that the catalog stuff is probably the most bulletproof asset because, yeah, like you say, people still do listen. And yeah, if he could find a buyer for Revolt, I would think that the music would be easier to find a buyer for.
It's interesting because I do think that there are different buyers out there, and the buyers that are buying and holding, they could do that. And it's not like every buyer is looking at this to try to turn this into a biopic, right? There are some companies that that is their business, but others are like, hey, this is an alternative asset for us. We're going to hold this the same way that we hold, you know, oil or trading cards or whatever it is. And I think there is a bit of recency bias that we'll say where, of course, anyone that would be looking at Diddy's catalog, of course, is going to get heightened attention right now, given everything that's happening. But that doesn't mean that someone may not buy it in a few years. And it also implies that every other deal that's happened is from someone that is a saint that doesn't have any scathes on their catalog or doesn't have any scathes on their resume that may make people turn an eye. And we know that's not true.
Totally. And, you know, when you think about the boom of private equity getting involved in music catalogs, over the past, you know, however many, I think that the, you know, the private equity types who are looking to buy catalogs, they're not really looking at sync. They're not really looking at the increase in value. They're just looking at something that they can plug into their Excel sheet, for what it's going to throw off annually. And I don't really think it's going to be deeply affected by any reputational risk because Diddy songs were a minority of Diddy's catalog, like of his catalog. It's all of the stuff with other artists, the, you know, the features and all of that, that, you know, that I think are the most cherished tracks. And I think those are the ones that people are, you know, are going to value and wanting to buy it.
You think so? What's the biggest bad boy song that doesn't have Diddy on it?
Well, he's always like around, you know, but he's like, what's the biggest bad boy song that has only Diddy on it?
Biggie Juicy's probably the most iconic, but in terms of the ones that get the most streams, like More Money, More Problems, I guess that's technically a B.I.G. song. Bad Boy for Life, that's technically a Diddy song. Because I guess like whoever is the main artist probably does get the higher portion than everyone else, even if there are features, right? Can't Nobody Hold Me Down, that's a Diddy song.
Yeah, Diddy is on every bad boy song, whether he's got a verse or whether he's just sort of like yelling in the background. But, you know, I mean, how many radio edits have we heard where it's California Girls and they just edit out the Snoop Dogg verse, or they edit out, you know, his sort of ad libs in the background? It would be very easy to do that, I think, under the guise of a radio edit or, you know, or something like that. Just the Diddy verses of whatever it is, or the ad libs that he does. You know, I don't know if we're going to be hearing like I'll Be Missing You. I know that wasn't just Diddy either, but that was like definitely a Diddy driven song. So yeah, a couple of them I think we will be a lot less likely to hear. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of these songs, it's like his verse is the worst one anyway. So.
There's a few other projects here that do want to call out. We don't need to spend a bunch of time on them, but they've clearly kind of came and went. So there was the cannabis deal. You and I talked about that one. Yep. There were these two companies that he was in the works to acquire. It was a $185 million deal. Wanted to be the biggest black-owned cannabis company we'd seen. This was around the time you had Jay-Z's deal. You had Drake's deal. Snoop Dogg had various ones where so many artists were trying to get into these different cannabis opportunities, and most of them didn't get anywhere. I think a lot of that more has to do with regulatory and the infrastructure broader than them. And just knowing that cannabis is a very tough business and it does take someone that is, you know, at the grassroots of it. And, you know, for every burner that's out there that has done it successfully, there's dozens of other rappers who are even bigger names that just weren't able to quite get there. So that's one of the businesses that, you know, I'm not saying that one was directly tied to any of these allegations necessarily. I don't know what they may have known, but that was a deal that fell through in 2023 last year, at least at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. And who's to say, you know, what caused it to fall through. But I think in the cannabis business, there are a lot of things that fall through for all kinds of reasons. And it's such a complicated world with a patchwork of regulations from state to state. So, you know, who knows what it was.
The other one too here is there was a Hulu reality series that was supposed to be coming out. Diddy Plus Seven. I'm assuming the seven was for his seven kids.
Yeah.
The name is a bit, feels like a throwback to like John and Kate Plus Eight era of TV shows, but that's canceled. Hulu is not doing that. But talking about multimedia, what I did see, TMZ reported that there are at least five production companies that are actively trying to pitch documentaries to cover the drama and the scandal and everything that's happening right now with the Diddy case.
For sure. And I think we just don't know enough yet about, you know, what actually happened and what exactly is coming out.
Right. Because I mean, I know both you and I know from being in these different conversations what a project being stuck in quote unquote development hell can look like. And it's like, even when you have all your I's dotted and T's crossed, right? So then here you're just basing it off of what we have right now in terms of allegations. And granted, I think there's a lot of weight that comes with them. I think with that, we've covered a bunch of these. Key man risk that's here specifically. We talked about it with Puff. We talked about it a couple months ago when we did our Yeezy episode on the rise and fall there. Do you think that these can be looked at as one-off instances of, okay, sometimes you do partnerships and the partnership that you do with the person doesn't go exactly the way it planned because this happened in the person's life and it hurts the partnership? Or do you think that there are broader ramifications here for future deals or business empires that are built in this type of way?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to have a chilling effect on celebrity-fronted brands, you know, for years to come. Yeah, especially when you look at Kanye and the Diddy stuff together. I mean, those are two sort of monumental, like multi-billion dollar disasters from a business standpoint. And I do think it's going to cause brands to think twice before partnering up sort of on that level with somebody being the face of a brand.
I think it'll probably hurt certain, whether it's hip-hop artists, R&B artists, I think it could hurt Black entertainers as well, specifically if there is some track record of issues or rumors about things that have happened or even, you know, erratic or uncontrolled behavior and things like that. I say that because I don't think it's going to necessarily hurt like Jay-Z's ability to do a deal right in the future. I don't think it's going to affect like George Clooney or Ryan Reynolds, but could it affect the next person rising up that's trying to build and have the things around them that is where, let's say, Diddy was 25 years ago? Maybe. And I think that's the thing that, you know, could be unfortunate, especially as, you know, we're at the next generation of young stars that are trying to come up.
I'm pretty sure that this is going to cause the return of some prejudice by some big companies that, you know, have had this in and out relationship with hip hop. I think we as a society love to see somebody's rise, but we also love to see somebody's fall. That's not to say that Diddy shouldn't be under investigation, or that, you know, that there's no merit to these things. Cause of course, you know, it seems pretty clear that there's some there, but, you know, I do feel bad for that next entrepreneur, you know, who wants to create that next big thing out of hip hop, who's going to get a little additional scrutiny that, you know, that's not necessarily deserved.
Yeah. You know, especially for the next generation there. So yeah, feel sorry again for Cassie and a number of other victims that have came out. Feel sorry for the people that, you know, the next footsteps may be a little bit tougher for them. But I'm glad that, you know, you're willing to come on and have an honest conversation here about this. So thank you. Yeah. I felt like it was only right. We've had enough episodes talking about when things are good. We also have to come on and talk about when things may not be good as well.
Can't ignore the bad too. Yeah,
exactly. Appreciate you. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Dan. As always.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.